The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I want to talk about hate speech laws because the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, confirmed she's not moving ahead with plans to introduce them. She says, though, she will do it at a later stage. She's adamant the hate crime legislation, quote unquote, will be enacted. Ronan Mullen is an independent senator. He's with me now. Senator, you've been a long-time critic of this legislation. It is a stay of execution, merely according to the Minister for Justice, but do you welcome it nonetheless?
Yes, I welcome it as far as it goes, Kieran. What they have said is that they're pulling in their horns, at least for the moment, on the incitement to hatred aspect of the legislation and leaving in place the hate crimes aspect of the legislation, which hasn't been controversial. We'll have to see what exactly they're going to do, though. The reason that people were concerned about this, as you know, is that with no proper definition of hatred and with a strange new definition of gender stitched into the bill, that this could really allow for a clampdown of legitimate free speech in areas of controversy. We still have the 1989 incitement to hatred legislation in place. That's important. It leaves the possibility of prosecuting people where they're intending or likely to stir up hatred. But I would be concerned now to see, is the minister, in what's left of the bill, is she going to give us a proper definition of hatred so that the law will operate correctly and precisely? And also, is that crazy definition of gender that's in there that basically just defines gender as potentially meaning neither male nor female or some combination of anything? It wouldn't be acceptable for that to go into any piece of legislation because it will be used in future legislation to close down free speech in other ways. So while the minister has given a promise of sorts, we need to see exactly what she intends when she says that she's actually, when she's pulling back on the incitement to hatred part of legislation.
Yeah, you would appreciate very few people read pieces of legislation. Fewer still will read proposed legislation. So can you just give us maybe and give the listener a few examples of the type of things that you might feel would fall foul of this that should not fall foul of it were it to become law?
Yeah, and it's important to state that, like, every reasonable person knows that, you know, there isn't an absolute freedom of expression, nor should there be. You know, I have legislation to try and put age verification requirements on people purveying pornography on the internet to protect younger people. And equally, if you use, you know, communicate in a way that you know, threatens violence or causes other people to will or act violence, then clearly the criminal law is appropriate there. But if, for example, you have, and again, I use the gender because it's an example, because it's an area where there's culture wars going on at the moment, that if you had a parent, for example, who was extremely irate, that, for example, an activist was coming into schools suggesting to impressionable children that, you know, you can change your gender, you might be male, you might be female, you might be something else entirely, you might be some combination, stuff that isn't scientifically based, but which is going around at the moment. And you even have the National Council for the Curriculum and Assessment were trying to push the idea, you know, that gender is a spectrum. And they had to pull in their horns on that when there were objections from education managers and school trustees. So there's crazy stuff going on at the moment where you have NGOs who have access to power, who are pushing certain ideas. And the concern that I would have had, for example, was if a parent wanted to communicate their displeasure in no uncertain terms, and perhaps even in rude terms that I wouldn't use about an activist like that going into the classroom, you know what? We have to put up with that kind of free expression of ideas in a democracy. In fact, that's
so,
one of the signs
you
that we are still a democracy.
You think that parent in that situation might be guilty of an offence of inciting hatred underneath this legislation?
I think that the freedom of expression defence in the legislation was extremely weak. And I think there's a real risk in the context of cancel culture that what you see happening is people ganging up online saying to the guards, oh, this is hate speech, you should be prosecuting it. The potential there for the Gardaí to be drawn into policing people's speech could have a chilling effect on people even opening their mouths in the first place. And there needs to be, you know, clear support for the free expression of ideas, even unpleasant ideas that you or I might not like or ever be involved in expressing, because that's the price we pay for living in a democracy.
Yeah.
We have seen examples, for example, of you know, internet companies just taking stuff down just for the avoidance of doubt. you know, and that's not good.
No, but at the same time, people will be listening to this and they think there's plenty other examples of internet companies leaving stuff up an awful lot longer maybe than they should have. And it's internet companies that, you know, defenders of the legislation might cite. They might say, you know, this is why we need updated legislation, is we now live in an internet age. And you've got the proliferation of, you know, not just kind of issues around gender, but kind of Jewish conspiracy theories kind of back swirling around, and that the legislation we have isn't robust enough to stamp that type of stuff out. Well, what's your response to that?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm not sure that the legislation we have isn't robust enough. I think let's see, because we have incitement. As I said, you have, it is a criminal offence to communicate in a way that is likely or intended to stir up violence or even hatred. So I would say use the law that's already there. But remember also, when you're talking about criminal law, you're talking about the extreme end of social sanction, where you can actually put a person in fear of their liberty. There are other ways to ensure that behavior is regulated. For example, you know, you have civil law where people can sue each other, example of defamation. But you have administrative measures. You have the regulation of the internet. So, you know, just because you're not threatening to put somebody in jail for saying the wrong thing, it doesn't mean that you can't control what is put up online. And I think that's where you need rules and regulations for internet companies to make sure that they follow standards and that they adhere to codes.
Alan Chatter is a former Minister for Justice and he's with us now. Former Minister Chatter, you're very welcome to the show. You've accused the government of lacking backbone in terms of this decision. Why?
Well, there's some of what Ronan has just said, I wouldn't dispute. I think it must have been a year and a half ago I wrote an article describing the bill as grossly inadequate and riddled with defects and anomalies, and I predicted it would be substantially ineffective. But the problems with this bill can be rectified by proper amendments made to it. And the section now the minister is removing from the bill, instead of being removed, should be amended. And I'm astonished that the required amendments haven't been well prepared and drafted by now by the Attorney General's office, because we have a real problem with hate speech and with racism in Ireland. And the 1989 Act that Ronan references is universally regarded as completely inadequate, including regarded as such both by the Director of Public Prosecutions and by the Gardaí. And we had starkly displayed an example of this. The very good primetime programme last Thursday showing the protests that took place. Let's put it simply. Some of the protesters were simply thugs. They weren't a number of them even connected with local communities with genuine concerns. They were repetitively targeting individuals with racist language, and they were intimidating them. And the law was utterly inadequate to deal with that. They felt as if they had impunity, that they weren't at risk of any criminal charges. And I just found it astonishing that the day after that programme, the Minister for Justice announces that legislation proved to be required by that programme is being withdrawn.
Mm. Now, you would have heard everything that the senator had to say, and others as well. You'd be well versed in their criticism of the bill, that it goes too far in undermining free speech, while acknowledging it's not an absolute right, the right to free speech, that this went too far in undermining it. What do you say to that?
Well, the oddity about this bill is, firstly, I agree with the senator. It should not have involved itself in what can be properly described as the culture wars. But the oddity of the bill is that it was ring-fenced by so many conditions and so many savings as to circumstances that could not result in people being prosecuted, that it was never going to achieve in this part of the bill the purpose intended. So I come back to a simple point. I know when Minister for Justice, we often publish complex legislation. You could never guarantee that there wasn't aspects of the legislation requiring change. That was the important usefulness of it being debated in the Doyle and Oireachtas committees. We regularly took on important amendments. But this isn't about the content of the bill. This bill has given rise to controversy. I accuse the government of lack of backbone because it's being withdrawn to simply remove it as a debating issue in the forthcoming general election. Instead, it should have been rigorously amended and improved. And the great irony is that we have Sinn Féin now acclaiming the withdrawal of this section of the bill, having welcomed the bill during the Dáil debates. Not a single government party nor opposition party in the Dáil debates that took place identified any difficulty with this bill. And that indicates that they were interested in headlines about the bill, not in its substance.
So this is politics over policy with a general election on
the
horizon.
This is entirely politics over policy. And I think there'll be a lot of people who watched that primetime programme last Thursday night aghast at a bill being withdrawn that could have readily resulted in some of those who are simply racists, thugs, and who are intimidating Gardaí, intimidating workers who are trying to get on with their job, intimidating asylum seekers, now being freed from the possibility of criminal prosecution.
Right, well, listen, it's a debate that officially they've only kicked the can down the road on, so perhaps we'll be having it again. Listen, before I let you go, Alan, can I just ask about Michael D. Higgins and his criticism of the Israeli embassy? So for people who don't know or wondering what I'm talking about, he wrote a letter in July to the new leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran. That letter was leaked, and he's accused the Israeli embassy, I think in kind of follow-on remarks, not of leaking it, but of playing a part in circulating it. What have you made of this?
This is entirely bizarre. It was a letter that our president sent on the 11th of July to the newly elected president of the Islamic Republic of Iran, referencing Iran having a long tradition of culture and able to play a leading role in the peaceful resolution of disputes. And he hoped for future and deeper engagements between Ireland and Iran and looked forward to our opening an embassy in Tehran. Now, that letter, as far as I'm aware, was published by the Iranian embassy based in Dublin on social media. And I saw the letter many weeks ago on social media, and I expressed surprise that this type of letter was sent to a state regarded as the primary promoters of terrorism across the Middle East, a state that was funding and arming Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad and the Houthis in continuing and instigating conflict in the Middle East. And it was an act basically of not just political fantasy, but brought Ireland, I believe, into political disrepute. Why he is now claiming that, firstly, it was a letter wrongly leaked by the Israeli embassy, I've no clue. But I'd come back to a very basic principle. If our president sends a letter to the president of another country, there should be transparency. People in Ireland are entitled to know what both our president and the government is saying to a state the American State Department regards as the primary instigators of global terror. And why he's offended or upset that it's now come into the public domain, I've no idea. I myself would have put it into the public domain back in August, and no one had any interest in it at the time.
I guess we're kind of still all seeking clarity on how he's dragged the Israeli embassy into it. I mean, in terms of the content of the letter, he's tried to defend it by saying this is kind of boilerplate stuff. You know, we've got diplomatic relations and these letters are sent out, whether it's kind of the president of the Islamic Republic of Iran or the president of Micronesia, whatever it happens to be, we'll send a generic best of luck letter.
It isn't usual to send a generic diplomatic best of luck letter to a tyrannous regime that hangs gay people, persecutes and murders women for seeking their freedom, that instigates terrorism across the world, that not merely condemns repetitively everything the United States does, but which advocates the destruction of the Israeli state and which is directly responsible for the mayhem now taking place in the Middle East.
But not to argue against any of that, but I guess Is your criticism more of our kind of foreign policy that we've got diplomatic relations then with Iran? Because no, otherwise the president really can't go on a solo run and decide not to send letters to, you know, presidents of countries he doesn't like, can he?
Unfortunately, he's reflecting a narrative that both the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste have been engaging in. It's something of a mystery to me why we're the one country in Europe that is dedicated to embracing Iran. And this letter, frankly, is the political equivalent to Eamon de Valera expressing sympathy on the death of Hitler. To send such a congratulatory letter to a state that is responsible for thousands of rockets firing out of Lebanon, Yemen, and the Gaza Strip at Israel, a state that is encouraging the disruption of world shipping by the Houthis, a state that is totally against any ceasefire of the dreadful conflict taking place between Israel and Gaza, and which encourages its continuance. To me, that isn't normal politics, and it isn't something that should be acceptable.
Alan Shatter, former Minister for Justice. Before Alan, we spoke to Ronan Mullen, independent senator as well. Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.